It's time for Hartley's CAT Scan, a weekly podcast featuring the who's who of your Prince George Cougars.
And welcome to CAT Scan, the Prince George Cougars podcast. And we're delighted today as the first of two parts with Dave Adolph. He is the athletic therapist and strength and conditioning coach with the Prince George Cougars. So you work with all of the guys. Before we get started, there's a lot I want to get into your background and your history and the many different teams you've been involved with. But welcome to CAT Scan. Welcome to the podcast world. I imagine you probably don't get interviewed a whole heck of a lot.
My first interview ever. So
really? This is the first time?
Yeah.
Of all, you know, and you've got a lot of experience. That's really something. I know it's not really a high-profile position, but you'd think that there'd be somewhere along the line that there'd be somebody looking for a comment or two from the athletic therapist.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
And it's I've always said one of the athletic therapist roles is I always considered myself and I was taught that, you know, like we're in the background.
Yeah.
You know, so always kept it that way. So I never really had any requests for an interview. So this is my first and thanks for having me. And yeah.
Well, there's so much to get, because you were born and raised in Prince George.
Born and raised in Prince George,
and then you moved away. All right, so let's get in. Let's find out about your background. All right, so you obviously went to one of the Prince George high schools, and tell us about that. Then where you went for university, and you know your background. You've been involved with a lot of different teams. Give us some of your history right now.
So, born and raised in Prince George, the high school I went to was O'Grady Catholic High.
Okay,
it doesn't exist anymore.
No,
but had a great time. Played many sports there. Was a basketball nut.
Was that your best sport?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And we had a good run in 1994. You know, but I was always a sport nut and.
Yeah.
Always liked the biology aspect, and I didn't even know that athletic therapy existed, but I always knew I wanted to do something.
It used to be called trainer, and now
trainer.
Remember back then, it was always the trainer.
The trainer. It's always a trainer. Yeah.
Is there a difference between trainer and athletic therapist?
Athletic therapist is what trainers evolved into.
Right. Okay.
You know, so trainers in the 60s, 70s were just, you know, tape you up and patch you up and throw dirt on it in essence. And then the program I went to started in 1976.
Okay.
And it started off, to my recollection, how I've been told, was it was a school for trainers, quote unquote.
Right.
How it was. And then it evolved kind of like in the early 80s into more of that clinical role, kind of like what, you know, many people go to a clinic to see a physiotherapist.
Right.
And so what an athletic therapist is they have those field skills, quote unquote field skills, where they're doing the field coverage, first aid coverage, taping, and handling the on-field injuries. And then athletic therapist goes into, now we work into the clinical side. So then once you get those injuries, then we can get you in the clinic and treat those injuries.
Okay.
And then it's not just clinical, but it's also just once there's a return to play, then we can go onto the field, court, or ice and work with you on that, you know, more sport specific.
Okay.
Rehab.
So continue on now. You went to O'Grady. Born and raised in Prince George. And now you graduate from high school, and it's shortly after that that you move away?
I did a year at CNC.
Okay.
And played basketball there for 1 year.
Played with the Kodiaks?
When CNC had a program. Yeah. And played with what I consider some high school legends, like Donnie Marchuk,
a
bell,
yeah.
Point guard. He's with the school district now, close friend of mine, Cap Manhas.
Oh, good old Cap Manhas, yes. Yeah. Known Cap for quite a long time.
And a lot of great high school players were on that team.
Was Cap a good player? He says he was. Give me the truth.
Well, and what Cap did, he did, and he'll rib me every now and then, we're a small school in O'Grady, and we beat – I always take pride that we beat every team on the last time we played them.
Right.
Except we never beat Cap in PGSS.
Oh, okay.
And he'll let me know that. Okay. And Cap was a great player.
Well, he was.
And the thing is – and people hear this, they hear the term garbage. He was a garbage guy.
Yeah.
And in basketball, what we say all the time, garbage is he'll be under the hoop, he'll get that easy rebound, easy putback.
That would be Cap. Yeah.
Which considered quote unquote garbage, in basketball circles, they'll say, but he had to work his butt off to get those rebounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so you played basketball there for 1 year, and then you realized, okay, you weren't going to the NBA.
that's what I was always interested in this field. I didn't know athletic therapy existed, but I remember talking to some of my best friends and my mom and saying, like, well, I want to get into something like this.
Right.
I was a sport nut. I knew I wasn't going to the NBA. I didn't know enough to be a coach, so how could I get on that bench? And
right.
That's how it started.
You want to be part of a sports.
Yeah.
It's sort of funny, like, I had very little athletic skills, and I wanted to be part of things and teams and everything, and wasn't going to make it as an athlete. I thought that being a broadcaster might be the next best way,
yeah.
right? And in your case, you wanted to be involved.
How can I get involved?
How you can be involved, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to have a lot of stories that you're going to be sharing over the course of our podcast here and all of that that you've had to deal with. But you thought you want to be involved with a team. You want to be right in there. You want to, you know, you want the insight.
Yeah.
And that was one way for you to get in. But you really, when you were in high school, you never really took courses or you never really thought of, hey, this is what I want to be.
Yeah. Well, I was gravitated towards the sciences and
okay.
whatnot and the biology. And,
yeah.
and I hated the plant side, you know, when you have
right.
to do the plant stuff.
Oh,
and it
yeah.
was always the human
body.
Boring. Yeah. That always got to me. And
yeah.
And again, you know, so I liked the sciences. I was into sports. Again, a sport nut.
Yeah.
And just like we talked about before, you know, growing up listening to you, you oh, know. And
how many years ago was that?
In the 80s. So, you know, we're dating ourselves. So,
oh,
you know,
goodness, yeah.
around, you know, 40 years ago, listening to the radio. And
still, you still remember back then.
yeah,
oh,
dude.
My goodness. All right.
So and so just all that combination, being a sport
yeah.
nut, I just want to get on that bench. You know,
right.
the first thing, like most, I think most of my colleague therapists were, you know, work with the pros. But then your goals evolve once you get into the school and whatnot. Yeah. yeah.
Right. Okay. So from there, then what happens after you leave Prince George?
So then I went to UBC and did 4 years there, taking the kinesiology. It was called human kinetics at the time.
Okay.
So I got my bachelor in human kinetics, but it's called the kinesiology program right now, like most programs are. And in my second year, I always knew I wanted to do this. And once HKIN 361, like in my third year,
yeah.
I could take that. It's an introduction to athletic training. I was interested in it. And then the prof was Barry Lee, who was very influential in my time at UBC.
Right.
Once I took it, I was hooked.
Right.
And after taking that course, because you take the labs and taping and
yeah.
you learn the injuries and whatnot, the next year there was another course called Human Kinetics 454A.
Mm-hmm.
And it was field experience and athletic training. So
right.
you got assigned to a team.
Oh, okay.
And again, I was like, well, I want to go with men's basketball. I'm a basketball guy.
Right.
Basketball
was your thing.
Basketball was my thing. I
yeah.
wanted to stay with it. And Barry assigned me to the women's basketball. And I don't talk to Barry that often as much anymore, but he was very influential in that one assignment. Hooked me up as a student trainer with women's basketball and
at UBC, right?
And Deb Huben was
oh,
the coach there.
Right. She's a legend,
absolute legend.
Yes,
and very influential person in my life. And
really,
from 1998, I was at UBC as a student, and then I graduated in 2000, and I went to the Sheridan College Athletic Therapy Program in 2000.
Right,
and I was super tight my second year. As a student trainer, I was the head trainer, and I got to travel with the women's basketball team.
Right.
And so I got really tight with Deb and the players. Her assistant coach at the time, Jim Day, we roomed together, obviously, being the only two males.
Right.
And best friend, he's my best friend in Vancouver
yeah.
to this day, involved in text chats with my other friends. But I was involved with UBC from 1998 to when I came back here in 2015.
So 17 years?
17 years. I was, uh-huh. And with Deb, like a lot.
And right.
When UBC would come for their Toronto tournaments,
mm-hmm.
part of my Sheridan College, part of my placements, I had to do what was called like weekend placements. I forget
right.
the exact term what it was, but weekend
right.
placements. And Deb wouldn't take her student trainer on the trip because they'd fly here and then I would cover. So
right.
even though I was living in Toronto, every year that Deb came to Toronto for her preseason tournament, I would sit on the bench and collect my hours, but work with them.
So how did you get from Vancouver to Toronto?
I applied to the Sheridan College program.
Okay. Right.
And it's at the time, anyone right now, anyone can get out of high school. But at the time it was, it's not a master's, but at the time Sheridan College would get around 500 applicants for 30 spots.
Right.
And so then the experience that I had, well, if I had a university degree, so then that would take, that would we like, well, say 200 would have university degrees. And so that would take, you were down to the final 200 or 100, right? Mm-hmm. And then it was, well, do you have a kin degree? Okay, check. Then we do you have experience as a student trainer? And then that kind of weeded it down. And in my 2 years at UBC, and you know, hopefully my marks, you know, they were good.
I'm just guessing. I would say you're an A student. That's my guess.
University, you have some fun times in university. Yeah. And I always tell everyone that I had kind of like, you know, the broad spectrum. I had my A's, my B's, my
okay.
C's,
all right.
But like, you know, mainly the B's and some, and a lot of A's, but you know, some would get some, you know, I had the ride.
Well, I think what was the one subject or what was the one area that, oh gosh, can't wait for this to be over. I'm not doing all that great.
Well, I was in the exercise science stream of human kinetics. And
right.
So I took first year biology and first term was all plants. I hated it.
Oh yeah.
And then second
Sounds
term.
Boring.
Was, yeah. It
Real
was
boring.
Super boring.
Yeah.
You go into the labs, you walk into the weekend to see how much a plant grew 2 millimeters.
Oh,
it
wow.
just wasn't for me.
No. I don't think it'd be for a lot of people.
Yeah. And then the other aspect was a first year course, which is really tedious at the time, but is really needed in what I do right now was the motor learning.
Mm-hmm.
Once you take it in first year, and if anyone has taken, you know, they've had their kin degrees in that first year, it's super boring. But the things you need to know that you take from motor pattern, like when I work with an athlete, either with the Cougars or treating someone in the clinic, it's okay. You learn a new thing. It takes 3 weeks for this, 6 weeks to get here, and you learn that in first year. It's quite boring, but it was very super useful.
Right. And then you moved back to Prince George in 2015 and you moved back. Why?
So there was a position. I left UBC. I loved my time there. Like many ATs around, it's not the most glamorously paid profession.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got offered for a job here in Prince George and it was more of a strength role.
Right.
And so through my time here, then I got my CSCS, so my certification in strength and conditioning. So then I was a certified athletic therapist. Then I got my certification to be a strength coach. And I did more of a strength role. I was the head coach of the sports school, if you heard of it. And it's a partnership with the school district where athletes would apply to get in grade 10, 11, and 12. They would take their first two blocks in the morning and their last two blocks, they'd come up and train.
Oh.
And they'd get credit for it. And so it'd be athletes of all different sports. And being here with on the Cougars podcast, there wasn't any hockey players. Because anybody that was playing hockey would go to the great PGSS Academy, the hockey academy, right? So we had every sport but hockey, right? We had one hockey player and he was kind of off the radar. Maxie and but then he got on the radar and played for the Caribou Cougars. So it was cool seeing that to help him get on there, and he's a special guy, special athlete. But with all the different sports, it was a wide range, team sports, individual sports. And then also with that position was I was the strength coach for the UMBC. All four of their teams.
All four teams with UMBC.
Yeah.
Right.
And everyone's like, Dave, how's it going to be like working with you know, you're going to be able to handle these four sports? And I was like, well, I'm coming from UBC where we have 26 teams and around 500 to 600 athletes. So I think it'll be okay just doing the strength role for four teams.
Right. And so that was a pretty easy adjustment for you then.
To adjust from the university to, my experience at UBC with UMBC, it was a really easy adjustment in that aspect and showed me a lot of aspects in terms of the resources that universities have. That say, for instance, at UBC, we would get our budget just for taping for all the sports teams around 30,000, 35,000.
That doesn't sound like a lot.
Well, just it's pallets upon pallets of tape.
Okay.
And then seeing the amount, like, you know, like UMBC wouldn't get that much tape. And so since at UBC, when we would just tape everyone, like, you know, just like all the guys, like I did football and basketball, and the tape you'd get every day, just, you know, from that preventative aspect, to where there wasn't that much tape at UMBC. And you see, well, no one's really getting tape because there's not as much tape resource wise. I was like, well, they don't really need, you don't need to get the ankle tape. Like, it's based on a resource based, because UMBC, they competed great and they didn't get their ankles taped, where, you know, it was like, I need my ankle taped at UBC. You know, like, I need it. Well, the resources was there. And so then it became a part, like a very important thing to them. Like, I'm not downplaying taping, but it was just really cool to see the resources, you know, that a UBC has, and then the UMBC has. And then despite not having some of the UBC resources, they all competed.
Right.
So it was really cool with my experience that I could offer in the strength role to, you know, help out with that and just see that side of, you know, what these athletes go through, you know, with that that every university athlete goes through, school, travel, training, practice, you know, and some balancing part-time jobs, you know, and then that transition to UMBC, not as much resources, but they compete hard. So seeing that day-to-day aspect was great.
So you were with UMBC from when to when?
So 2015 until just around 2022.
Right. Yeah. And then before you came to the PG Cougars, you were?
Just starting my own practice.
Right.
And and it was just.
And it's still going right now.
It's still going right now. And just. It you know, I was getting clients and whatnot, and it was just like any entrepreneur, any starter of a small business will attain, was like, I knew of the marketing aspect. I knew that you wouldn't have much of a life to, you know, like it just really consumes a lot of your life. But it was just in aspects like the majority of it just being marketing and whatnot, not just treating and doing the stuff I love. It was just that marketing aspect.
So then the PG Cougars job came open. And you decided you're going to apply. Now, most guys or people that get hired at the WHO, they're probably a little bit younger, don't have your kind of experience.
Yeah.
What attracted you to saying, you know, Mitch has left the Cougars, he's gone on to the AHL, here's an opportunity that I might be interested in?
Yeah, and I met Mitch Carapita. He was a former athletic therapist before me, and I met him at...
he's much younger, though.
He's mid-20s,
yeah.
And he came to the Cougars 1 or 2 years right out of athletic therapy school.
Right.
And what attracted me to it was, with my clinic, was there was the marketing aspect, that the exposure that I could get. Mm-hmm. You know, being with not just exposure, like, hey, this guy is the Cougars trainer, you know, athletic therapist, you know, maybe I can go see him. There's that exposure aspect, but there's the professional connections, you know, with the team docs and whatnot. And then also what also attracted me was knowing that I do have a lot of experience being, you know, over 20 years as a certified AT, was as a fan, like I was in the stands for game 6 of last year.
Against Portland. Double overtime?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I was going to games more. You know, like I went before Christmas and I was like, man, this team is great. Like, you know, like how great team was. And then, you know, you're seeing Riley Height, you know, Zeems, and you see how the team is doing. And he's like, oh my God, like this is like, they had a great year. Everyone that's coming back this year is set up for a great year. The job came up. I applied and started talking to Mark. You know, one of the things that was discussed was that, like, I think you guys are really set up, you know, for a really great run. And with that great run, you know, I think it'd be, you know, Mitch was great, but maybe it could be help out with more of an experienced AT. And that's one of the conversation points that Mark and I had.
Right.
And so it just fit with timing wise and just where the team's at right now, where I am in my experience. And, I couldn't ask for anything more. Like being in my strength role, I wasn't really into the athletic therapy side, you know, for many years. And being with these guys, man, it's really re-sparked my passion for AT.
We're speaking with Dave Adolf. He is the Prince George Cougars athletic therapist, a strength and conditioning coach. This is the Prince George Cougars podcast. We're going to talk a lot about the Cougars and your involvement and everything like that. But you've talked about the fact that you've dealt a lot with women's sports and now men's sports. I want you to compare being an athletic therapist, having to deal with women athletes compared to the men.
I like to say there are differences, 100%, right. But at the same time, I like just the bridge, like the commonality that both have.
Okay.
We're athletes, right? Okay. Like, they're athletes.
Yeah.
And there are differences. There is one moment when I was in sports school where we had a female basketball player was training. And with the male basketball players, she was the only female basketball player in the sports school class. And the male basketball players were training. There was respect going on, but there was the ribbing, right? Oh, you can't do that. You're a girl. Right. Said facetiously, where she got the joke, right? Mm-hmm. There was one time where it was getting a little bit too much. And like, I'm just sitting there around the gym coaching. And I heard it was getting a little bit too much. And I just went, hey, listen, there's no, and like, I hope this gets across into the point that I'm making. I go, there's no guys or girls in here. Just ballers come through that door. You want to work your butt off? You work your butt off just like she does. She works her butt off just like you do. Are you a baller? Yeah, we're all ballers in that basketball term, right?
Yes.
And it was just like, you know, everyone has those goals to win. And so there are differences, you know, between male and female. Like, there is 100%, but to bridge that gap, it's, you know, everyone's there to compete. And working with the female athletes, like I was really fortunate to work with the Canadian women's national team for 3 years, right out of school from 2005, 2006, and 2007. And, you know, Christine Sinclair was on that team.
So that's soccer now.
That was soccer, yeah.
Yeah. How did that happen?
Like, when I was living in Toronto, I did a lot of work, like placements, and picked up, you know, I answered like ads to cover teams with Ontario Soccer.
Right.
And so that I made connections there. And then when I moved to Vancouver, when I moved to Vancouver, I was moving 2004 back from Toronto and I had an interview with the Prince George Cougars at the time.
Oh, really?
And I didn't get the job.
Right. Okay.
And so I didn't get the job. And so I just said, well, I'm moving to Vancouver. I had no plans or whatever. And Deb Huband, I called her, hey, Deb, I'm just coming to say hi. I'm moving to Vancouver. She's like, well, what are you doing? And she said, well, you're working with us. And it was a piecemeal thing. So she took care of me. I worked with women's basketball, just with women's basketball. And then I answered an ad to cover a camp, and it was the Women's National U17 camp. Mm-hmm. And the head coach was a coach that I worked with in Ontario. And so I worked that camp. Him and I bonded great because we didn't really see eye to eye in Ontario. Then we got to know each other. But with that camp, it was a great 1 week camp during the 2004 Olympics. I remember we spent all night talking, watching the 2004 opening ceremonies in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
But during that camp, the U19 coach was there, Ian Bridge, who was the assistant with the women's team. And he's like, Dave, I like what you do. We're getting ready for the U19 World Cup, and our therapist lives in on the island, in Vancouver Island, and we're training at SFU. Could you cover us while we train? So during that time from that camp, I worked with the U19 team, and then Evan Pellerud, who was the head coach, he was observing the U19 team, and you know, like, had a great time with Bridgie and the U19 team. And if anyone is aware of that team, like, Carl Lang was the star. And so working with those players, they left for November of that year for the World Cup. And then in January of the following year, 2005, I got a call from Evan Pellerud saying, hey, we're leaving for a 3-week tour in Europe. Do you want to be our athletic therapist? And
that was quite an honor.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So it's one of those things that just with the connections made, and many coaches have told me this, I never really took it to light at the time. It just, you do a job that things gelled well, but it just, you never know who's watching.
You mentioned Christine Sinclair.
Yeah.
I mean, the queen of Canadian women's soccer. What insight, what can you tell us about her that we've heard all these great things in the media. We've seen her great interviews, class all around. But what can you tell her that, because you know her, you must know her pretty well.
She is, her and Cara Lang together at the same, are the most competitive athletes I have seen compete.
Like men or women.
Men or women. In a way that...
more than the hockey guys or...
Competitively,
really?
She's a psycho. And what I mean by psycho is how basketball fans, like everyone watched The Last Dance with Michael Jordan. How he is psychotic in that way, like just to win and whatever. The way that it was in practices and like, okay, well, we're 2 hours in and like practice is over, both Cara and Cinqui, we're not over, no, because, they wanted to work on this or they lost that last game. It was like, no, we're going again. We're going again. She was just so competitive. Yeah. And at the same time, still, very understated. Like, she was just like that on the field, but she is Cinqui, like everyone sees with, how quiet and reserved that she is. But on the field, just like... In the best way, in the best complimentary aspect, like a competitive psycho, and it was awesome to see.
Yeah.
There's things like when she retired, I don't know if it was Karina or Aaron McLeod on their post saying like the times that I remember that we'd be finishing a practice raining on SFU and she'd be practicing goal kicks like drenched, like pouring rain. She didn't care.
Right.
And so her competitiveness was like that. And then from a fan standpoint, watching from the sidelines was being born out. I was a crazy Canuck fan and I hated Wayne Gretzky in the 80s because he killed us.
He always got more goals against the Canucks than anybody else.
Right. And so I would always, as a kid and what's up with this guy? Like he does nothing, like everyone says, like he wasn't fast. He wasn't this. Yeah. And it was, he does nothing. But before you know it, you look on the, it's like, this guy does nothing. You watch the game. And then he has, three goals and three assists, six points. Cinqui was very unassuming like that. And then at the games, and he's like, Jesus has three goals.
Yeah.
It was just, like Cinqui was very gifted physically, but she wasn't super fast. She wasn't super this. She was just as intelligent as Wayne was. And you're like...
Could think the game of soccer ahead of all the other players.
Yeah.
And that's what separated. I mean, she's got more goals than anybody else.
Yeah.
Assists, games played, lengthy career. You can't be at that level without being incredibly driven. And if you were to take a look at the next player down from her, there would still be quite a difference in how their makeup is. Is that fair to say?
She just lives, eat, breathes soccer. And so just, getting to talk to her, her uncles played and, she grew up in that. And that story's been told of like, just, she just loved soccer. Right. And it was just ingrained in her. And, just with the class, she wasn't vocal, but she was vocal in her later years. And obviously I wasn't with them, but it was just, she led by example and everyone knew she's our goal scorer. She's going to win us games, but she comes in, never misses a practice, never misses anything and led by example. And it just soaked into the team.
Right. Well, that's a captain. That's a leader. And she's obviously the ultimate, in terms of that. So you're talking about the differences with, being an athletic therapist for the men and for the women. And you were talking about that there are some differences. Could you maybe elaborate a little bit as to how you look at those differences?
I would see this at the high school level. And it's, again, it's just how, from the most part, is how, guys can leave it off the court. Female will, why was she so mean today?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say that that's not my belief. It's just my experience where, personally, like when I was playing basketball, like three of my best friends were playing and there'd be some times that we would get physical and go not go to blows, but little punches here and there, and you know, and curse, and you know, hey, you know, all that. And then after, hey, you still need to ride home, you know,
right? Yeah,
and,
oh,
and
yeah,
just drive.
That's right, yeah.
Whereas, and that happens in female sports,
right? Yeah,
that also happens in female sports. But then there'd be a lot. I'd be talking to a lot of the high school athletes in sports school, and they'd be like, it wasn't because it was one athlete was saying like she was really driven. She was just like in practice, she'd be like, hey, like do this, do like, you know, like we're not doing this, do it this way. And she would say in her experience, and she's female, and I'm not painting that this is all females, but her experience would be like, then people thinking like, why am I such a female dog? Why am I being like this? You know? And I was just like, you're not, man. You're being competitive. You're being like, I kind of approached it. It's not a male or female thing. It's a competitive thing. Mm-hmm. And so when I say that story, that's not painting that females are like that, that males are like that. It was the players on her team weren't as competitive as her, weren't as driven to the details as her, and took it in a different way.
Right.
And I felt that again, as like I said, no guys or girls coming to our gym, just ballers. Are you really going to work your butt off? And I just took it at that is like, it's not because she approached it as like, it's just because I'm, you know, like I play like a guy. That's how I was said. And I was like, there's generalized differences that people can discuss. I just never saw it that way. It was just like, you are competitive and you are driven. And there are people that aren't as driven as you. And it's not a judgment on her teammates.
Right, yeah.
It was just those experiences. And in the way that experience was, it was, oh, it's different between guys or girls. I'm like, no, there's guys that will take it just as personal I've seen with 1,000 of athletes. So, like, it happens on both sides.
You must have a real appreciation for women's sports, having spent a lot of your life around that and understanding that. And it's only recently, I think, that the attention has been there, and they're getting, you know, the professional hockey, and, you know, in the past, you know, okay, maybe at the Olympics, but now it's so much into focus, and rightfully so, and everything like that. You've probably had an appreciation for a lot longer, you know, and understanding how excellent things are.
Well, just to expand on that, the answer is 100%, even from growing up, like Deb Huban is such a huge, important person in my life. really gets emotional talking about her, but then working with Sinky, right? Working with the national team. But before that, growing up, and I kind of want to pick your brain like as a sport nut and whatnot, growing up, listening to your voice, you know, I don't know if you remember these names, but a couple players that I really looked up to went to O'Grady. If you ever remember Ruby Vray.
Ruby Vray was a top-notch basketball star out of O'Grady and also could play volleyball at a high level and was an outstanding athlete.
National level judo as well.
And judo, yes.
Yeah. So she was 2 years above me. And when we were grade eight, you know, we were okay as grade eights, and we would have to pick up basketball. And she would tell, like, my buddy Paulson and Fouché, and say, hey, you guys want to come up? And, like, she would dominate, you know. And these pickups were with the guys and the girls. Mm-hmm. And she would just dominate. And then it went to another name, if you remember. She came up with us. She was a year younger than me, Kerry Wilson, who I regard as, in my opinion, I feel she's the best basketball player ever, like female basketball player come out of Prince George.
Right, yep.
And growing up with her was actually like her and I would like get dropped off at like 6 a.m, 7 mm-hmm. in the morning just to shoot hoops.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so like, and then we'd play, and there'd be a lot of players like were playing pickup. And Ruby may have moved on, you know, like she graduated and went to St. FX. But Kerry would come and play pickup with us. And they're like, why are you guys playing with a girl? And we'd laugh. And it's like, she burns us as much as we burn her. You know, she can ball out. Like, hey, try it. And Kerry would take care of her own. And so there wasn't like a thing that we would on the surface say, oh, female sports, male sports. I think that those experiences led to what I talked about in the gym with those athletes. It's Kerry could ball out, you know, Ruby could ball out. And Ruby was older than us, and she took us under her wing, and I looked up to her.
Right.
Right. Yep. She just happened to be female. Right. Yeah. But the way she conducted herself as a leader, as, you know, she would be engaging with everyone. Right. But then just compete like in those pickup games. It's like, yeah, you learn from that. Like you soak that in. And then growing up with Carrie, backing her up when some guys would, you know, be a little bit physical. It's like, no, you don't do that. Like, let's just play ball. Like, she can hang with us. Yeah. And it was not because like she's a girl. She could just ball out. And so we never really, like, I grew up that me and my group of friends really never saw guys or girls. Could you play or could you not?
Right. Yeah, right? Exactly. So how many women or females are athletic therapists and strength and conditioning coaches compared to men, roughly from what you see?
I think the majority are more, there's more female athletic therapists than there are males.
And that when did that change?
I would say probably around the late 90s. Yeah, I don't know exactly. It just, when my first year in 2000, we had a class of 35, okay. And there was about 8 males.
Oh, okay.
And the rest were females. So around that time, it was getting, you know, more females.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you've dealt with that in terms of that. Is there any, I'm trying to see how to word this, or whatever, but when you're dealing with a female athlete in terms of injuries and having to work on certain, you know, parts of their injury, mm-hmm. Can it be a little bit, you have to be careful sometimes because of the makeup of the...
No, an injury is an injury.
It doesn't matter. Yeah,
injury is an injury. There's more prevalence, like the research is out there. There's more ACL injuries for females, but an injury is an injury. The rehab that I've done for my ACL rehabs for males and females have been the same. There's more prevalence, as the research shows, but to me, an injury is an injury.
Right.
And you just treat it as such, like to what's the demand of their sport, right? And what's their goals, what's their position, you know? And just go to what's their demands.
And imagine how to prevent injuries. That's a whole other topic.
It's a whole other topic. And when I talk to colleagues and they really, excuse me, they hate the terms. I don't really get into the terms. Some of my colleagues hate the word prehab. But when you try and prevent injuries, that's what the strength side, the strength side of the strength conditioning side that I've done, I was really able to apply my athletic therapy skills, you know, to help program, to do the squats and the power movements, the Olympic lifts, but then to add in some of these things like, hey, here's some things we can do for a little bit more ankle mobility. Here's some things we can do for some hip mobility, some hip strengthening.
What do you do for the knees? Because you see so many knee injuries.
I always see knee as a transmitter. Many movements that people do is that if they use the knee as a force generator, mm-hmm. it's not a matter of if, it's when. That the knee transmits forces. So there's a thing that from feet up to inside out, like it's called proximal to distal and distal to proximal.
Mm-hmm.
So proximal to distal, proximal, my center of mass, to distal, outwards towards my feet or towards my hands. Distal from the feet to the center, that there's movements that you got to push your feet into the ground. The force comes from the ground. So that's feet up to then the core that we do, quote unquote core, that's like proximal to distal. If we have that proximal to distal and distal to proximal, then what's caught in the middle, like from feet to hips and then hips to feet, let's say in that aspect, then the knees are going to be okay.
Right.
Right. So the knee is always, the way I see it, the way I treat it is I program it in my strength conditioning and I treat it, is that it's a transmitter, mm-hmm. right? Because if you look at the musculature of the hip, glutes are so big. The joint of the hip is so, like the hip bone in it is very stable, right. Whereas the bones of the knee aren't very stable. Mm-hmm. The quads aren't as big as the hip, right? Mm-hmm. So if we have that hip, you know, stability, then the rest of the chain down really helps.
Are there some misconceptions we have about our body or injuries, or we think this or we think that, and you're sort of saying, no, that's not necessarily the case?
That is a very aspect of complaints that I get, frustrations from athletes as well as patients in my practice is, well, I went to see some other people and I feel this. And then I've been told, no, it's not that. Mm-hmm. And I from the end of the therapist, I can see where that therapist is coming from.
Yeah.
But the thing about this is not you're just fixing injuries. It's you're helping people in terms of their goal. You're trying to empathize with what they're feeling. In that difficulty that you're asking about is I've learned through the many years that, and I tell the athletes this, what you're feeling is always right. From a sign and symptoms, like sign, a definition of a sign is you is something you can see, you can measure. I can see you're bruising, where a symptom is what you report. I feel pain, but you can't measure that, right?
Yeah.
So what everyone's feeling is right. No one can tell you you don't feel that pain.
Yeah.
Right. And so with that, in that aspect, in the culture of sports, right? Are you hurt or are you injured? You don't feel this, just shake it off.
Well, if you're hurt, you can play. If you're injured, you can't. That's a simple term,
in that aspect. But the point that I'm getting at is that everyone has a different pain threshold.
Right, yeah.
Right? That some people will have this and they'll say, screw it, I'm going to play. To where some people will have something that as a therapist, I would consider minor and like, Dave, I can't go. And you can't. I feel that I can't say I'm not in the right position to say like it's their wants, you know, and if they feel they can't play, they can't play. And as a therapist, I have to work with that.
Oh, and this is going to lead us to part number two about, because I know you ultimately have the final say as to whether a Prince George Cougar can play or not, correct?
I always like to go with the team. It's always a team decision. It's up to the player. It's up to myself. It's up to the team doc. The coach is involved. Okay. And at many times, not necessarily with the Cougars because, you know, they're billeting here, but it's up to the parent too.
Okay.
But in essence, what it's really up to, everyone has a say. Everyone can say their thoughts about it. I always say it's up to the injury.
Oh,
you
know? Okay.
And so like you test it out. Can you do this movement? Can you play this position? And the thing that says against that is if you can't do it safely, that's where I say you can't play.
And I want to continue with this thought and comments, and I want to get into a lot with the Prince George Cougars specifically on the second half of the podcast. Okay. So let's do that. We'll pause for now, if you will. You have been listening with Dave Adolph. He is the Prince George Cougars athletic therapist and strength and conditioning coach. This has been part one of CAT Scan Podcast with Dave Adolph. You have a great one.